Strav is a green leaf that looks like spinach, but it is sour.
Just give it a mix so you see. That one, it just needs an egg yolk in it still.
She's a wonderful, wonderful woman.
I grow it because you can't buy it.
She's effervescent.
Strav.
She's full of life. She's full of humour and wonder.
S-Z-C-Z-A-W. Now, get your tongue around that.
And you would not know what a hard childhood she had when you meet her.
That's Australian journalist and author Iris Makler. She's on Skype from Jerusalem. And the woman she's talking about lives in Melbourne, 82-year-old Judy Colt.
I mean, Polish background, I was 3 when the war broke out, so the regular cooking was gone.
She's an artist as well as a very good cook. She will have baked something for you, I'm sure, and that will be a treat.
Well, maybe try the cake now. I'm very excited.
I'll just get you.
Judy is one of the Jewish grandmothers that Iris has written about in her blog and now soon to be published in a book called Food is Love. I'm sitting in her Melbourne kitchen as she cooks a traditional Polish soup from a recipe that goes back to her great-grandmother. And I still can't pronounce it.
Oh, you can say sorrel.
It's sorrel.
It's sorrel.
It's right. Sorrel soup.
Yes, the French make fish sauce out of it.
Right. So. But the Polish call it?
Strav.
Nice.
And it grows around railway stations and so on. It's a weed, actually.
Now, Judy, when I rang you to organise me coming over today, I said I'd love you to make me a dish from your childhood. And you said, well, I'll make ants then. I'll make ants because I used to eat ants.
Yes, well, that's when I was hungry during the war. There was a time when my sister and I were hiding, pretending to be blind in an institute for blind children. And there was a little gypsy boy there. And I've got an idea he might have been sighted as well. And he used to eat boot polish to supplement the food. And ants. Well, we tried the boot polish, and we just couldn't cope with it. That was yuck. But the ants were quite nice. They tasted like pickled cucumbers a bit. They were sour. I haven't eaten any since the war, I must admit.
Do you take milk and sugar?
Just milk, thanks, Judy.
On the kitchen table are some of the dishes that Judy's already made for the regular family gathering. It happens every Thursday.
Shall I pour?
That'll be great.
Yeah?
All right. There's a fruit dessert, there's a Middle Eastern-style cauliflower dish, and a babka, a traditional Jewish cake that's also Polish for grandmother. I pour the coffee and Judy begins to tell her family's story of 1939, after the Nazis invaded Poland.
We started off in the ghetto. My father thought we'd be smart, and when we were told to go somewhere or other, we went to Warsaw instead, because we thought it's a big city and we'll just get lost in the crowd. But Hitler reached much further than that. We didn't get lost in the crowd. We were herded into the ghetto, and it was the Warsaw ghetto was... I saw everything in the shades of grey there. I was, by then, just over 3. You don't forget things that made an impression, be it good impression or bad. I also never forgot the big watermelon that when I was younger than 3, my father brought in the sidecar of his motorbike. It was huge. So it really made an impression. I remember it until today. I can see him sitting there and I can see the watermelon and a block of chocolate next to it.
So, that would be heaven.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yes, so but the ghetto, there was no watermelon or anything like that. It was... I stood on a stool most of the time at the window waiting for my parents to come back from work, wherever they were. With the children, there was my sister and I and 3 of my cousins. But we were not together. No. A dozen different places. One of whom was a boy, so that was particularly difficult. And then in a cellar somewhere else was my father's brothers, Mum's youngest brother, who would be there during the day, but at night he was in the forest with the partisans.
And I remember reading that your father moved you to another ghetto, which was next to a forest.
We, I don't know if they had anything to do with it or not, but the whole family was moved to Otford's ghetto, a smaller ghetto right on the edge of a forest. There was a mental asylum next to that ghetto, and it was a well-known one. A young Swiss couple ran it, Jewish doctors from Switzerland. The Germans took it over during the war after. But Mummy used to take us for a walk to the mental asylum, and I didn't know why, but it turned out that a lot of her friends were hidden there until they found a place to go to. But then one day the ghetto was liquidated. We heard and saw it all, and everyone was shot. Don't know what happened to doctors, but they didn't survive. It was actually a German officer came to warn them.
So there were good people on both sides.
But they could not leave the children because it was mainly children in that asylum. They had very modern methods. They had small cottages with a group of children and a carer.
That is incredibly modern.
For them. And to try and get them ready for the outside world when they grow.
And Judy, I think your father celebrated your fourth birthday by taking you somewhere special.
Now, when we were the fourth birthday celebrated in the Otford's ghetto at my grandmother's room where she stayed with other members of the family. And she made me a beautiful cape, lace cape out of newspaper, cut out newspaper, and a crown. And everyone saying happy birthday. Mm-hmm. And I got presents. I got a stub of pink pencil and a used coloring book. And an apple, all to myself. But all of us kids shared the apple. We all had bites. And then my father took me for a walk to the edge of the forest. And he said, now that you are four, no longer a child, I will teach you how to survive. And he did. He said, when spoken to, always look the person straight in the eye. Don't let go of their eyes, and they will never know you're afraid. And they won't be suspicious. But if you are really afraid, tell the squirrels. There's lots of squirrels in Poland. He said, they'll know where I am, they'll tell me, and I'll make sure that you're okay, whether you see me or not. And I really, really believed it. And it helped me in some very sticky situations. There was one time when eventually we were in a convent for a while, and the nuns were wonderful. They were just fantastic women. I think the religious belief was so strong that they wouldn't be afraid. Mm. I really thought they were angels when my father took us there, because when he rang the bell or knocked on the door opened and a nun came down the stairs, and she was wearing this long gown, and I couldn't see her feet, and she was floating. And I thought, oh, we will be all right here. We're in heaven, they're angels. And that's how I see them, as angels. They were really wonderful. And we were getting ready to go for a walk with our teacher, who just recently passed on. I used to visit her in Poland. And we went down into this long passage where our coats were, and I jumped up to try and get my coat because I was the littlest one. I wasn't at school, but I was allowed to go with them. School was forbidden, but we had a school nevertheless there. And I feel a hand on my shoulder. I turned around, and there's a big man in uniform. And across the road, directly across the road from the convent in Kazimierzowska Street in Warsaw, was the SS headquarters. And I used to see this, and it was a very safe place to be hidden, of course, because no one was
right suspected. Under their noses,
In plain sight. So I saw this man going in and out of there, and I saw a familiar face. I smiled at him and then I suddenly, the uniform registered. So I did what I always do when I'm nervous, and I talked 20 to the dozen. And I told him about the walk we're going to take, and to the songs we're going to sing. And I told him, do you know that in Africa, the priests wear white cassocks because that deflects the heat? And I know this because my father told me, and my father is very clever. And I'm sure he didn't understand the word I said. But he patted me on the head, reached for my coat, helped me into it, and turned around and walked out.
And he was an SS officer?
Yeah. And I could not understand why my sister and Pani Zosia, the teacher, hugged and kissed me. And I said to Tosha, my sister, Why all the kissing? She says, because I love you, little sister. I could have given them all away. If they catch one too, they would have killed us all.
No child should ever have to experience the horrors that Judy did as a young Polish girl on the run for her life, which is why this vibrant 82-year-old just can't fathom why we don't seem to have learnt the lessons of that terrible lack of humanity.
Make your wish for the first bit.
Okay.
We eat a slice of the babka cake as Judy talks about how her mother slowly gathered together the remnants of the family after the Russians liberated Poland and they travelled to Germany as displaced people. After many months of waiting for an offer, her mother was finally invited to emigrate to this country and the United States on the very same day.
Australia.
Judy's mother tossed a coin and it came up Australia.
But I think in retrospect, even if it hadn't come up, she probably would have still chosen Australia because a cousin was coming here.
Right.
So she wouldn't be quite alone.
Family is everything, isn't
it? Absolutely.
Particularly when you've been through such terrible times.
And no matter how distant, it's still a close relative.
But what of Judy's father, who'd used his Aryan looks and contacts to hide and protect not only his own family, but other Polish Jews as well? What happened to him? Judy tells me it was the day her older sister received Holy Communion. Because what better way to hide Jewish girls but to have them accepted into the Catholic Church?
This day of the Holy Communion, when the photo was taken, Father took us to a restaurant. I've never in my life been to a restaurant. It was a restaurant that was, most of the staff were members of the Polish underground, of the partisans. My father went there often because the German officers dined there. And he used to get a lot of juicy bits of information for the underground there. So he took us there and we ordered a meal. My favorite, I was allowed to choose, tomato soup and rice. And we got the rolls and we were sitting waiting for the soup. And the door opened and two guys came in uniform. They went up to my father and started screaming at him in a language I didn't understand. And he answered in the same language. And they took him into a room. The waitress came out with the soup through a swinging door. She spilled some on my sister's beautiful white dress and bent down to clean it. And she whispered, "Run, children, run." And we didn't run. My sister was too clever for that. She took me by the hand firmly. We walked to the door and to the corner, and then we ran like crazy. And we hid in a field of maize, and we laid down and we stayed down until it got dark. And
how old was your sister?
3 years older than me. She was 9, I was 6 then. She did have communion that day, and she was still wearing the white dress.
And the wreath in her hair?
Yes, the whole lot. And we went back to the convent after dark, and the superior, Sister Wanda, had already heard.
But Judy, what about your dad?
Well, my sister was telling me that he is no longer alive, and I knew she was lying. I told her straight out. He's here, he's watching me, he promised. It's something I did for years after the war, still I was chasing men from the that looked from the back like him. I have found out since what happened to him, or sort of found out, because there's two versions. My father was actually kept as a political prisoner. They didn't know he was Jewish then. And then after 6 months, they sadly found out that he was Jewish. So we were told he was then taken to a cemetery and shot. The other version is that no, he was taken to Auschwitz, but tried to escape and was shot.
In the meantime, for years, you were running after men who looked like your father.
Oh, yes, yes. And then he'd die all over again every time he turned around and it wasn't him. Oh, it was horrible. But I can see him and my sons and my daughter. We never really die.
The extraordinary, Judy Colt, who at 82 years old is still celebrating her very survival with the Polish food and the recipes she's passing on to her children from generations before. In fact, her son asked Judy for her great-grandmother's sorrel soup recipe. He's living in London, and I love the fact that Judy communicates with him using WhatsApp. Judy and other Jewish grandmothers, along with their recipes, will be published in a book written and edited by Iris Mackler called Food is Love. I've put a photo of Judy in her garden up on the website and links to more information. You can just go to Life Matters and find out more.